That one was having a deep attitude, isn't it?
A what?
That was the one we first met.
Well, she, what you going to be?
Funny attitude. Ah, but you're going to meet him, what? Second one. About.
Quickly grab a cup of to apologize. We started more than 30 minutes late. Some logistical arrangements have caused this delay. Apparently, on the part of the department, there was a bit of a confusion. They were told you are coming, they were told you're not coming, and I think we're trying to sort that communication gap on that side. Let me allow space for us to introduce ourselves before we deal with other housekeeping matters and then get to the main item of our agenda for today. My name is Fred Gona. I'm the chairperson of this portfolio committee. To my immediate right is Honorable.
Rose Sonto, a member of the committee.
Nomvula Machibela, member of the committee.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Chris Khuluru. I'm a member of this committee. I come from the most beautiful province called Mpumalanga, where the sun rises. Thank you.
Mparalanga.
Good morning. I'm Eric Marine. I'm from the most beautiful city in South Africa, the city of Cape Town. Thank you.
Eric Lucas, member of the committee.
Philip Dexter, 100% Zulu boy, member of the committee.
Honorable Mjali, I'll introduce. Babu Nyegamba.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Eric Nyegamba from the ruling party, the African National Congress.
Thank you. The gentleman at the back there.
Francois Williams, journalist from Soccer 24.
Madame.
Mm-hmm. I'm Eleni Fumi from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Bongfeli Ngwabo, researcher for Parliament, for the committee.
Good morning, Nick Garvey from SavvyNet.
Come here, leader to my immediate left.
Andre Andreev from the Department of Mineral Resources. Thank you. Chileji Ramunja, the CEO of the Council for Geoscience.
Patuani Ramagwede from the Council for Geoscience.
Tivela Fisipe from the Council for Geoscience.
To you, madam.
Yogazi Mwabozi, Officer of the Chief State Law Advisor.
Sisa Makaveni, State Law Advisor.
Thank you very much. Welcome, as I've said. The first issue on the housekeeping matters is that members would remember that we were going to have a joint sitting today with the SCOPA. The first item on the agenda was going to be listening to the department briefing us on the rehabilitation of the ownerless and derelict mines and other matters that are outstanding in terms of what was raised by the Auditor General. So we had an agreement with SCOPA because they also called the department for the same purpose, that let's rather do it jointly. But unfortunately, we received a letter on Monday from the office of the Director General, indicating that the Director General has taken ill and as a result has been hospitalized. Then the view was that the subject matter required that we needed to interact with the accounting officer, and therefore it would be problematic for us to engage with delegated officials. So we then agreed that the matter should stand postponed for until next Wednesday. That is subject to the condition of the Director General if he has fully recovered. In his absence, we also checked whether the minister is available, and were informed that she is in the entourage of the state president to the state visit in China. So, therefore, we would entertain that issue next Wednesday. If he is still not well, that is now the Director General, we will then look at another date for us to deal with that matter. That leaves us, therefore, with this second item, which is the briefing by the department on the bill itself. I hope that members will appreciate and agree with that approach. The second matter of housekeeping. We have agreed in the last meeting that you would receive copies of the revised program. And we've explained that this revision was caused by the appeal from the Chair of Chairs due to the fact that parliamentary program has changed. And I hope that all members did receive the copies of that. But to say that when you look at the Z-list, even this morning, we have challenges. The Z-list still reflects the old program right up to the end of this term, something that I think the committee section must, you know, correct, you know, immediately. Because members of the public, sometimes all they do, they would access that Z-list, which informs them of what are the deliberations and the programs in Parliament. And as a result, the briefing on this bill, in terms of that list, is scheduled for next week, and the first. So I think that's something that we need to deal with. You know, so I hope that you do have your copies of this program. If not, let me take this trouble to just reconfirm that today we're dealing with a briefing. Next week on the 5th, we're scheduled to listen to the department on the matter of Chaung community. And if the Director General has recovered, that matter of Taung is going to be postponed. And we will have this issue of ownerless and derelict mines that we will deal with jointly with COPA. Immediately after that, we will commence with the public hearings on this bill that is now on the 1st of September. On the 3rd of September, we will continue, which is a Friday, with this public hearings on this bill. And on the 8th of September, which is on a Wednesday, we will deliberate over this bill, approve this bill. We will go through it line by line as it is required, because we, in terms of that instruction from the parliamentary leadership, if we want this bill to be dealt with in this terms, National Assembly, by Wednesday the 8th, we must conclude on it, so that it then gets submitted to Parliament. Then on between the 13th and the 17th, it would be deliberated on in the National Assembly. So I would want members to please keep tab with this process, because we would need to finalize, you know, this piece of legislation before us by the 8th of September. We have a number of people that have indicated interest, and the committee section is in the process of inviting those that have indicated that interest. Having then dealt with that matter, those matters of housekeeping, we would then allow the department to then take us through the bill. I see that the refreshments have now arrived. At least if members can just collect and come and sit down, that would assist us a lot. Thank you very much. Over to you, the department.
Thank you, Chair. The presentation will, to a large extent, deal with a brief summary overview of what the objectives of the amendment is, and just give a brief outline as to what the department, in conjunction with the Council for Geoscience, is trying to achieve with this particular amendment. This presentation will, as I say, deal with the summary, and then my colleague, Ms. Mashinini, will then look at the technical aspects of the bill that supported, I suppose, by all of us with the assistance of the state law advisors who are present here today. The bill was gazetted on the, let me start first by saying that the bill, in 2008, Cabinet referred the bill back to Parliament for further consultation. Cabinet was of the opinion that the consultation that was conducted at that stage was insufficient, and further consultation affecting a much broader stakeholders had to be conducted, and that was the reason why it was referred back to the department. Since then, a number of consultations have been conducted with relevant stakeholders. A list of these stakeholders has been provided to the secretary of this honorable committee, which is quite extensive. The bill was then certified by the state law advisors and approved by cabinet in December 2009. The bill was then published for public comments under Gazette number 33014, as is required in terms of the parliamentary rules. Inputs and comments to the bill was received from a number of stakeholders, among them the South African Geological Society, the University of Witwatersrand, the Chamber of Mines, the Institute of Civil Engineers, and the list goes on. The department then drafted an extensive response to the inputs and comments that were received, and we've not heard any further queries from those particular stakeholders who made the initial input and comments on the bill. To get into the objectives of the bill, to a large extent, the bill seeks to mandate the Council of Geoscience to be the custodians of geotechnical information, to act in a national advisory role of authority in respect of geohazards related to infrastructure and development, to undertake exploration and prospecting research in the mineral and petroleum sectors, to put mechanisms in place to address problems which are associated with infrastructure and development on dolomitic land, and to empower the CGS to be the custodian of all geotechnical data with the purpose
of compiling a complete geotechnical risk profile for the country. That, honourable members, is briefly what the bill is trying to seek to achieve. The bill being mostly for the good of the citizens of this country. It is hoped by the department, or envisaged by the department, that the objections that were received, or that we would receive in future, would be to a large extent of such a minute nature that it would not necessarily be an impediment to the bill actually going through the ordinary processes of Parliament, because there is nothing controversial in the bill that would enlist any objects to the bill. Is there for the good of the citizens of the country and to prevent development on land that might prove to be of a risk in terms of the particular nature or the development on delimited land. I with your permission, Chair, I would then take questions on this. The CEO of the Council for Geoscience has prepared some notes on this. He has indicated that he will speak off the cuff if there's any questions that the honourable members want to pose to the department or the Council for Geoscience. That will then be followed by a in-depth reading of the actual bill, and then questions can be posed on that should the members then wish to do that.
Maybe let's go straight into the bill itself. Members would note whatever questions they have, so that then we engage on the presentation.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure if you want us to go through every section by section. Should I read it out?
I think you've given us a broad view of what are the objectives of the bill. But in certain sections, you are making fundamental amendments, which would need to be explained so that members can then understand, what necessitated those changes. I mean, give us brief motivation in each section so that we can then, because that would solicit, if we don't do that, it would solicit questions backwards and forwards from members.
Thank you. Mostly the critical changes that are in the bill, the first one would be the bill mandates the Council for Geoscience to be the custodian of geotechnical information. South Africa is currently, if not the only country, that does not have any formal exploration and prospecting data, so we want to make sure that information comes to government hands. I will ask him Dr. Amusa to explain more on the issues.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honorable members of Parliament. The first part of the bill, where we have got the, I think, it's section one there. These are just, I think, mainly cosmetic changes, whereby, for instance, we change referring to chairman to chairperson, issues around the executive officer. Those are just really cosmetic changes. Also, we used to refer to the board as management board, and we are now going to refer it as the board as it is there. Also, we are looking at issues whereby we used to refer to the department as the Department of Minerals and Energy Affairs. Now we'll be changing it to the Department of Minerals Resources, like the Minister of Mineral Resources.
coming to the where we talk about Section 3, substitution of Section 3 of Act 1993, it will be paragraph 35 there on the document which you have. We have included the following, where we indicate the object of the Council for Geo Science. And in terms of this, it addresses the whole issues around the geohazard. For instance, to promote the search for exploitation of mineral resources and petroleum. This is just to ensure that the Council for Geoscience plays an active role in terms of attracting investment into the mineral industry. We realize that the country is facing a problem in terms of attracting investment in this area. And in the past, the Council for Geoscience used to be involved in just mapping and leaving the situation as it is. But now what will happen now, we will be doing exploration, but not moving into mining. There is a clause which excludes the Council for Geoscience from mining, because then it will be controversial area for the Council for Geoscience. It's not a good area. It just means that we are extending our research to a point whereby we can get involved in exploration, and if something is found, it could be given out there to the people or to the state-owned mining company or whoever is interested. But we will not mine. We will be excluded from mining. That is a new thing which comes into the Act. And then there's also, under paragraph 40, undertake research in the field of geoscience and act as a national advisory authority in respect of geohazard related to infrastructure and development. This is a very, very important thing, because if you look at what is happening in the country, especially in high densely populated areas like Gauteng, infrastructure is being built in areas which poses risk to the same infrastructure which is being built and also to people. If you look at Gauteng itself, it is estimated that plus minus 25% of Gauteng has got what is called dolomitic rock. And this dolomitic rock, or dolomite, they actually create cavity. And people build on these rocks, and eventually those areas collapse. The country can't allow the situation to continue as it is. A very good example of this problem is in Kudzo. Currently, Kudzo, which is in Kaltenville area, Merafong area, part of Kudzo is being relocated to a new area because of this problem. And I was speaking to someone yesterday. He said it is estimated that government will spend about 3 billion rand in terms of relocating people to a new area. I'm speaking under correction in terms of the figure. I just heard it from someone yesterday. But you can look at the situation. It is very difficult. If you look at the Ekurhuleni area, there are some townships there in the Ekurhuleni area which are actually built on dolomitic land. There are constant problems in those areas. And, government spends a lot of money even building RDP. But if the Council for Geoscience is brought into the picture, then the developers, or even municipalities, when they develop, they will have to come to us and say, for advice, expertise, and say, look, where can we build? You think we can build in this area or not? Then the Council for Geoscience can say no or yes. This is the bottom line of it. In the past, there are some municipalities, like the Pwani municipality. They use the Council for Geoscience. But there is no law which basically forces and most municipalities and even developers to actually come to us. NHDRC sometimes uses us, but there's this loose arrangement. So in terms of this new law, if it goes through, all developers will have to go through the Council for Geoscience. There will be a mandatory advisory authority. And we discussed this issue with many departments, the Special Department of Public Works, which also is concerned about this issue. They've been involved in it. They felt that we need to be an authority of some kind. That is why this word authority is used in the Act. And the other issue which we brought in there is the whole issue of geo-environmental pollution. Also, that means the Council for Social Science will be involved in giving advice with the knowledge which they have, especially with pollution related to mining. They will be giving advice to the state. And then also this provide specialized geoscientific services. This is a thing which we've been doing in the past, but we just put it also there. Let's go on to page 4. It's the constitution of the board. On page 4, also there are some cosmetic changes where we refer to the chairman as the chairperson now. Also addressing the whole issues of the department. But what has happened here is, in the past, we used to have a one person coming from geoscientific education or training and was nominated by the Geological Society. So that has been changed slightly. We have somebody from petroleum. We also have ensure that we are now in line with the new department of government who should be represented on our board. And we have even brought in somebody from National Treasury to be part of the Council for Geoscience, so that they can also be aware of what is happening in the Council for Geoscience. In the past, National Treasury was not represented on the board of the Council for Geoscience. Coming to the functions of the Council for Geoscience, that is paragraph 50 on page 4 there. We have emphasized the issue of undertaking geoscience research and related technological development. Here we're trying to address a situation whereby the Council for Geoscience can patent their research. They can start to look at developing technology, because of late the organization has moved in an area whereby now they are doing research which can be patented. The organization has not yet patented any research of its own, but it seems as if now we are at the stage whereby we will be patenting some of our research products. We also address the issue of, if you look at paragraph 55 there, we have brought in paleontology as an additional function. Paleontology, which is basically the study of fossils, it was not captured in the functions of the Council for Geoscience. So we brought it in here. On page 5 at the top, we brought in geohydrological aquifer systems. This is basically understanding groundwater in a regional manner. We are not going to move into the area of Department of Water Affairs, who are really working hard. We work with them closely here, but because we'll be involved, we are continuously involved in geological mapping and understanding the rocks. So we thought that the Council for Geoscience should be empowered just to look at the regional geohydrology of the country, as they are mapping the country in terms of minerals and the rocks. They could basically be looking at that geohydrological studies and giving that information to the Department of Water Affairs. Geotechnical investigations, I've really talked about it. It's just to empower the organization to be involved in issues of geotechnical investigation, which are related to development and infrastructure. Seismology and geohazard. This is the whole issue of earthquakes. Traditionally, the Council for Geoscience has been involved in the monitoring of earthquakes. We monitor the earthquakes in the country on 24-hour basis, and we have got stations throughout the country. So we are just putting it there so that it is there. It's known that the Council for Geoscience should perform this function. The other one there is, comes to my mind is the whole issue of the museum. If you look at paragraph 25 there, 25F there, 25, the Council for Geoscience has got the museum which is looking after, but it is within what they call the Transvaal Museum in Pretoria. But we felt that we should remove that statement, because that statement was obliging us to have that museum within the Transvaal Museum. So that means we could establish a national geoscience museum anywhere in the country. But this does not mean that we'll remove it now. But in future, if the council feels that they want to establish it somewhere else, they can establish it. For now, we'll continue operating from the Transvaal Museum. The bottom of page 5, these are just cosmetic changes also. Page 6, also these are small, I mean these are just cosmetic changes there. Okay, page 6. To serve as a national advisory authority for various local, provincial, and national authorities. Page 6F at the top there. I mean, that's a very critical issue of this. I think it's the heart of the amendment. This will empower the Council for Geoscience to be an advisory authority when it comes to development of infrastructure in the country. The other one is at the bottom there, paragraph 55. Also, we emphasize that all geotechnical reports pertaining to infrastructure and development shall be submitted to the Council for Geoscience. It will be as in a prescribed way. Here we're saying that for us to be in control of the situation, each and every developer who develops in the country will have to submit this geotechnical information to us, and then we can store that information. It's actually very interesting, because some time ago we got the call from the province of Limpopo. They said, look, you know, we've been appointing consultants to do work for us here, but we have lost track of where did they work in terms of geotechnical investigations, you know. But because we don't have this national repository in the country, it was a difficult situation. But we thought that we helped them, we put together a database for them there. But in this case now, it will be a national depository. So everybody who has done geotechnical investigation, their reports will be stored at the Council for Geoscience. Even after 20, 30 years, something happens in that area, people can go back and say, what was the technical information in terms of the rock structure in this area? The information will be stored at the Council for Geoscience. But paragraph 55 tries to address this. And then, let's move on. At the bottom, these are prohibitions in terms, and they're actually clearly captured on page 7 at the top there, whereby these amendments are just saying, look, the Council for Geoscience can now undertake exploration. However, there is exclusion. They are not allowed to undertake mining for themselves. So that addresses that. So we are not going to be involved in mining at all, but we can be involved in exploration. That is that exclusion there. And then on paragraph, section 8, paragraph 25 there, is the appointment of a geotechnical appeal. Because we are going to be this advisory authority, there will be people who will be aggrieved by our decisions. So it was decided that, okay, let's have an appeal committee. It will be a committee within the Council for Geoscience of independent people. People can appeal whenever they have got issues with this. I mean, on this issue, it's going to create additional work for the Council for Geoscience, that for sure, because when a lot of development is taking place in the country, there are continuous people who are developing, preparing geotechnical reports. And certainly there will be disputes in terms of the decisions of the Council for Geoscience. But that provides for that avenue whereby people can lodge their appeals. Page 8. Okay, these are also cosmetic changes for this act. They are not critical ones there. And page 9, also the mainly cosmetic changes there on page 9. And the bottom of page 9, page 50, this is just to also cosmetic, because we had this what was called executive management committee of the board, but we don't have executive board at the Council for Future Science. So it will just be a committee of the board which will be given functions by the board to perform in between board meetings, and that's all. Page 10 also, these are mainly cosmetic changes where we address the issue of management board, changing it just to be the board. Page 11, also there are all cosmetic changes there. Page 12, also cosmetic changes. Page 13, also cosmetic changes. Page 14, also, okay, this one of whereby the minister may issue out a direct, that is page 14, paragraph 15 there, where it states that the minister may issue a directive to authorize the council's officials to enter any land within the borders of the Republic of South Africa in order to execute the council's mandate, save where there is prohibition under any other law. This was necessitated by the fact that our scientists, when they have to do their work, they encounter problems, especially in entering some farms and the like. And we thought that a clause like this can help, whereby we can go to the minister and ask the minister to provide a directive which will enable our scientists to enter some of the farms where they've got serious problems. People just stop them and say, you cannot enter here. So this will actually help us in that regard. Because basically most of our work involves going to the farms, you know, in the mountains there, and people staying there. They've got to enter this area, which are some people. They're basically, some of them are owned by private people. So that clause will actually address that issue. And then page 15, also cosmetic changes. And that's it. We have also put together financial implications for the state, which we have addressed there. The first year, we will require to implement the act, we will require 98 million rands. Second year, 86 million rands. Third year, it will be 86 million rands. We have got the details in that in this regard.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Lamontra. Chair, that is in a nutshell what the amendment bill seeks to achieve. You could, I suppose, tell from some of the wording that was used that we, when appearing before this honorable committee, we will need always to appear with the Council of Geoscience. The words like seismology, some of these terms are not very familiar with officials that come from the legal and mineral section of the department, but we are here to support the Council for Geoscience in ensuring that this bill sees the light of day. We now, I suppose, are open to questions, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, that's the briefing, and let's clarify issues. I see Honorable Marais, Honorable Matibela, Honorable Magabule, Honorable Khululu, Honorable Sondo, Honorable Lucas, Honorable Nyegembe, in that order, please. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to go first to page 3 of the bill, number 40. by the new law, all developers have to go through the Department of Geoscience. That will also be applicable, I suppose, to all municipalities if they want to develop areas. What fee are you going to ask them? Is there a way there's a, you know, if I do such work, it will cost 500 rand? Because a developer would want to know. If I have to go now through you, because at the end of the day, you can end up, you can ask any price. And then that will influence people to develop land for housing and say it's not very costly for us. So there's some way that we must get indication on that. I would like if you can answer me on that one. And it's only the last one. I might just make a remark on that one. I found it very interesting. The one that you actually, page 14, and that is point 15. So the minister can issue a directive to authorize the council officials to enter any land. I don't know. That's why I like the legal people to be here. Could that be a problem in the sense you infringe on people's private rights as of our own private land, the way they should be go about it? Will the department approach me and we'll come to agreement? You can come on Wednesday from 10 to 11, or, you know, it could influence if I'm farming on the farm and I'm busy with something and now you come in, you know, there should be interaction in some form, because it could be very prescriptive and the end of the day it could be a conflict situation that we have to avoid beforehand.
Thank you, Honourable Matibela.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Dr. Ramunja. We swear in Monarch. Chairperson, I just want to know about when geoscience is going to go through the whole country and make sure that the ground is okay for anything to happen. I just wanted to know, are they also going to do for the roads? Because sometimes you find that a road is being built in less than a year, that road is has got it's on a dolomite area. I just wanted to know, and the other one is which I wanted to go to was the funds one, but I think Honourable Murray has already touched on that, I think.
Thank you, Chair. You said that in this bill, the minister will appoint the chair of the board, and after that you said he will also appoint the alternate, and then if that but you also said in consultation with the board, but you will agree that all the members of the board have been appointed, and then the chair appoint the minister appoint the chair, and then after that he appoint also the alternate, and then I don't understand this thing. The other thing is that the Council of Geoscience cannot be, if someone wants rights to mine, the manner that the power has been invested to them, indeed, you can't just get the right in the department. You have also to go via to the Council of Geoscience, because they have to look the place, and then they have to check everything that is that thing happened there. So that power also doesn't take some of the powers in the department. I tell you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Hulu.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me first wish the DG of the department a speedy recovery, and wish him well. I've got two questions here with regard to the Council for Geoscience, in that they'll be playing that advisory authority role to the state and to other institutions. Just wanted to check if you will be charging a fee to those who would want your services, and to individuals. How are you going to do that actually? How are you going to charge those individuals and municipalities, if it's municipalities and so on? You're also doing work on the trying to check if there's earthquakes and stuff. According to the work that we've done up to so far, are we prone to these calamities such as earthquakes and all that? And if yes, when do you think we're going to have one? And then, of course, you've got a very mammoth task now of approving major projects where you have to find out if here, this and that. I wonder, how are you going to deal with the situations whereby you find that the people who bribe you, who want you to approve projects and all that, are you ready for that? Because there will be people who come, maybe who want you to approve the certain, what to call it, for them. And then, of course, I think I like the idea of the amendment whereby the minister will issue a directive to authorize you to enter into those premises where you want to do your work. Thank you very much.
You, Honorable Lucas, and then we'll come to Honorable Nyagamba and Honorable Sondo.
Yes, thank you. I think it's been very informative. However, the geoscience could have input from other stakeholders, Fitz University and other places. Is there any way that we could just get a brief outline of what were their inputs so we could just look at them and see what happened? The other thing was that the information that geoscience will get, because I must say, I think it's something very good that when they're going for exploration, because this is basically what stopped the HDSAs from progressing, because of that vital information. Will this be available at a fee to the people so they can progress? The other one was, of course, was the Transvaal Museum. Why don't we change it? Why don't we change it? I mean, it's one of those things. Why are we pussyfooting on that one? And the appointment of the board, what happens to the management board? Is it all the ministers going to appoint all these people? Or what process? What does Parliament, what say will Parliament have in this?
Honorable Nyagamba.
Thank you very much. I think I must come to this portfolio committee now and again. You're welcome. That's two areas for me, Chairperson. The one is, which I think members have already asked questions on that, but I think it's important for me. Around the sphere, how does even currently and in the future, Council for Geoscience charge. I'm asking this, sir, because you will find a situation where there are investigations that have been conducted by consultants on a particular area that has developed or is about to be developed. And that instead of the development to take place, you will be told that we are still waiting for geoscience, Council for Geoscience, to give approval or to do further investigations in that particular area. I think that question of the fields to be charged, I'm attaching to that. I'm talking from experience, in particular from everyone. So that's where I am. There are two areas there. It's difficult to develop those areas because there are preliminary reports that came from consultants. Now, the stumbling block now is the Council for Geoscience to further do investigations. That's the first point. The second point is I think members have already spoken to this on page 14, clause 15. It's good because the state legal advisors are here. Is this not open to different interpretations? To say the minister may issue, because once you to me it's not very clear. I mean, it's open to different interpretations. Like the point that isn't raised in the farm, somebody will say, this is my private property, so. It's open to be challenged in different tribunals. Can't we find a wording that will make it a point that this is beyond challenge? Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Sondo.
Thank you, Chair. I think the presentation is quite clear insofar as what is required is concerned. Let me start by looking at page 14, the same thing that was would must not work instead of may. I'm saying this looking at people who would hide behind the Bill of Rights and try to block development using land Kenya or something as a field for the required development is that section giving the council the required leeway to do or to perform its mandate without legal impediments or whatever? I think I would want to be clarified on that one. Secondly, on the amendment, as you were getting inputs from various institutions, what impediments did you observe coming from those inputs insofar as this bill is concerned? And what are the loopholes that you were sensitized to, if there were? Okay. Then the second one on the appeals, on the dispute. One would want to check. I know this is. This might not be correct, but I would want to understand the institutional standing of that appeals committee. What legal standing will it have? Because I'm just thinking, literally thinking of a situation where people would just go to court in terms of instead of going to that institution that has been arranged for that particular dispute resolution. So how would it enforce that function of dispute resolution
As you were talking, Dr. Ramoncha, I was thinking about this huge infrastructural development that would follow the passing of this bill. I don't know whether the last section is an answer to that confusion, to the confusion I had from page 1. That is page 17. Whether that the cost that is displayed there includes the infrastructural development that is required to prepare for this function or to operationalize this function. I think those would be the questions, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's allow you an opportunity to respond to those and see if there are other matters that would arise.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start with the issue of the fee. Yes, we will charge a fee, but it will be a very nominal fee just to cover, you know, administrative costs, the time of the scientists to it's not intended to make, you know, huge profit. I don't think it will have a serious impact in terms of development. We are currently doing that with the NHBRC. NHBRC sends people to us, and we just charge them as nominal fees, because it's insignificant in terms of the value of the development which takes place. It's totally insignificant. The other issue is the issue of the minister's directive to enter the land. Yes, it's always a challenge there, but we need to be empowered to enter the land, because we're just doing it for South Africa, for everybody. Now, once we enter this land, our scientists can go there and do research. The whole of South Africa benefits. So we really need something which will empower us. Yes, we will still have to consult with the owners. We won't just walk in there. We need to develop that relationship, you know. But sometimes you find people who are really hard on our scientists. They get frustrated in terms of entering land. But we always have to continue to consult with the people. Okay.
Sorry, I just want to add something on that entry. There is a similar provision in Section 50 of the Mineral and Petroleum Development Act, where the minister can cause an investigation people to enter into land. I just discussed this with my colleague. Maybe we should be a bit more prescriptive and say we need to give notice to the landowners to ensure that we are not that we don't meet unnecessary core challenges. But I want to echo Dr. Ramoncha's view that it is imperative for the Council of Geoscience to be empowered to be able to do this investigative work without hindrance. So maybe we need maybe just to be a bit more prescriptive and prescribe the manner in which the official or the scientist, if you were, would then go about, similar to as is provided in Section 50 of our legislation, that even speaks to compensation should they be damaged to the property. Should the compensation not be determined between the two parties, you can appoint an arbitrator. You can refer the matter to arbitration. So there's a whole range of ways in ensuring that both parties are kept happy and that the state gets the information it desperately needs to be able to serve the people of this country. So maybe, Chair, that's something we maybe should look at, being more prescriptive, building on that provision, in making more provisions in terms of how you go about ensuring that the official from PGS is not hampered in his or her investigations. Okay.
Okay. On the issue of mapping the whole country, yes, it is our intention to ensure that we map the whole country, both in terms of geology for minerals, but also for infrastructure development, because the mapping for minerals is a different angle, but for mapping for infrastructure development is a different angle, whereby now we are going to look at the different soil types there, whether the soil expands when it gets water. So we'll be mapping and producing regional maps, which can be will be given to municipalities and town planners. They can now plan and say, in this area there's high risk, we can perhaps utilize this land for this and this and not for this and this. So I think it will create a very good thing for the country when it comes to that. Let's take for instance Gautrain. We worked very closely with the people who were building Gautrain there. We provided them our maps, our knowledge of that area, because that Gautrain is on dolomite. So we need to understand what's going to happen, because lots of money is being put to build Gautrain. But what's going to happen after Gautrain is finished? There's going to be lots of infrastructure which is going to mushroom around Centurion area. And we know that Centurion has got lots of dolomites in that area. There will be sinkholes in time. So we need to work hard together with the municipalities. Fortunately, the Tshwane municipality, one municipality I can say, they always work with our scientists. They are always there. They are actually supporting these things. During the consultation, they were there. They said this is needed. So we'll be working very closely because they know the problems which are going to arise, especially around Centurion. The issue of the minister appointing the chairperson, the current process as it is, I think the department will come in there.
Thank you, Chair. The minister initially appoints all the members of the board. She will appoint the chairperson, then appoints the other members, and then the alternate members in terms of the amendment, the bill, they will also be appointed by the minister. But the principal act, initially it said that the minister, when appointing the chairperson, she will consult with the members of the board, but we are removing the fact that the minister must consult with the other members of the board when appointing a chairperson if the other one, the time has expired. So the minister will appoint all the members of the board without consulting with the board.
The bill is not actually removing the powers of the department to issue out mineral rights or prospecting rights. They will still remain with the...
Can I jump into that explanation? That excludes the CEO. The CEO is appointed by the board.
The CEO is appointed by the board in consultation with the minister.
The experience is that if the minister must go and appoint the members of the board in consultation with the board members, sometimes there are problems. So the minister is given that prerogative to go and appoint the board members. Of course, the act, it goes and explains to the minister that those board members, they must be people with the necessary expertise. It's not like minister will go and appoint people without experience. So the act is going to guide the minister who to appoint and how.
Okay. That's a problem then.
Do you want to press your, because we're recording the proceedings here.
That's a problem then, the minister being given absolute power. Is it a lesser problem that one, I mean, can the minister being given absolute power? I'm worried about these absolute powers that could be given to the minister.
Chair, can I respond, please? Thanks. Thank you, Honourable Member. Our experiences, and I would hate to be pressed to name actual institutions, has led in the past to almost a paralysis or breakdown of the operations of a particular SOE, precisely because of
disagreements within the board itself. I'm not saying this is the case with the Council of Geoscience, but I'm saying that should the minister be hamstrung by disagreements between board members as to a point that might lead to an absolute paralysis of the functioning of the board. And that is why, and the problems that we've picked up with other SOEs who will remain nameless for now, we decided best to give that prerogative to the minister, guided, as my colleague has said, by the prescripts that are in the amendment bill.
Whilst I hear that, but the responsibility is so great, and I think if yes, because then the sole responsibility is left entirely on the minister. Now, whereas she has not been, there should be another some way in advice. I know we're having a problem now with the board of communications, SABC, but what happens if you have a board member who not to use the use, that the minister will be there to remove that person without any consultation or anything. The fear I have is that one way safeguard the minister, and the other hand also, once you've got a good minister now, you might have a not so good minister tomorrow, then why?
If I may, Chairperson, maybe can we then take it under consideration and say that we will look maybe at the minister appointing board members in consultation with the board? Would that be members who are already appointed? Because I can't see how that will work. It might just lead to unnecessary delays in terms of having a functional board and appointing members to start urgently with the business of the day. Maybe Doc, you want to maybe add on that?
Yeah, I think there is an element of, you know, trying to ensure that the board represents several stakeholders. And when you look at how it is being constructed, I mean, how the phrases there are put there, let's take one. The national treasurer will nominate someone. So basically, the minister doesn't even nominate the person. The person will be nominated by the Director General of National Treasury. Then you go on to Department of Environment Affairs or Science and Technology. The Director General of Science and Technology will nominate that person. So at the end of it, I don't think the minister has got absolute powers on who must be appointed. The nomination basically will come from the various stakeholders. I think there will be in three occasions or so whereby the minister can appoint his or her own people of choice. But the majority of people will have been nominated by various stakeholders.
I think on a matter like this, honorable members will just have to look at, do we have sufficient criteria, as Dr. Ramuncha has now explained, that these board members are nominated by various organizations that shall be represented in the board? Because the danger of a board, you know, electing itself is so vast. You will find people looking for like-minded people. I think that's the first problem that we would want to avoid at all costs, that let the board be established, but the board cannot establish itself. Secondly, within the context of a developmental state, and also in avoiding the current problems of the autonomy of these boards in the state-owned enterprises being, you know, taken out of context, where the boards have got almost unfettered powers in taking decisions willy-nilly, and the state is unable to intervene. This provision here says that this board is accountable to the state, and the representative of the state is the minister. And therefore, if a board member is so found not to be performing according to the expected standards, then there must be a right for the removal of that board member. And if certain decisions of the board are not in line with the national objectives of the country, then there must be a political authority that must be able to intervene and deal with that situation. So it's not necessarily conferring too much powers to the minister, but it allows a space for the state to be able to intervene. But I think as they are briefing us, let's also think through, do we have sufficient provisions? One problem I have is that the minister somewhere here, I don't know which clause, whilst we're talking about the board, is that the minister have the right to dismiss the board. It may, on good cause shown, dissolve the board and appoint a new board in accordance with Section 9 and so forth. This can let us run into problems. You can have a situation where the minister will dissolve the board and run without that board. We need to look at time frames here, so that if you dissolve for whatever good reasons, but within a given space of time, you must reconstitute that board. You have a situation currently in your department where you had the advisory body. It was dissolved when? In January? In April. It was dissolved in April. We are now April 2009. Was it 2009? April this year. We are now more than 6 months of that having happened. April, June, July, April, May, June, July, August. 4 months. So we need to have time frames so that you don't have a situation where the board, because the board might take decisions that the minister doesn't like. And as a result, the minister might feel this is, a nuisance. Therefore, I must get rid of this board. And the law would allow that minister to do that. But then we need to have time frames by when must that board be reconstituted, so that we then cap, these unlimited powers. Honorable Mukagula.
Thank you, Chair. I was listening to them very carefully. She said all members of the board will be appointed by the minister. And Dr. here, he said some members will come to the various departments, and then now I'm confused. And then I want the clarity on that.
Can I
clarify, please?
The DGs of the respective departments, they're going to nominate, then the minister appoints the nominated. But the appointment is done by the minister. The various departments, they nominate, and then the minister appoints.
Honorable Charlie?
Yeah. Maybe get the opinion of the state law advisors on this. Because I'll create a situation where we'll find a minister having actual powers, and he is going to be having powers to appoint and disappoint. So, let me see what do they have to say about this.
Chair, they are not really absolute powers, Chair, because they are under check of the Constitution. The section says where the minister has to select the board. I'm using that word loosely. Where the minister has to dissolve the board, he has to do so on good cause shown. So there would have to be valid reasons that are justifiable by the minister. So it wouldn't be willy-nilly. It wouldn't be where a minister is unhappy with certain decisions that the board takes. It would be under circumstances where a board is
whether there are valid reasons for doing so. And on the appointment, Chair, as my colleague has indicated, there is a nomination process that would be in place, and then that process then would culminate on the minister appointing the members of the board. So it would presuppose that the minister would also consult with the various stakeholders in whatever decision that he takes relating to the board. Thank you.
Chair, just checking on good cause. Whose interpretation are we taking here?
Chairperson, a good cause, the thing is you cannot say now, I mean, sitting here, what would be a good cause. It would have to be a valid reason that is justifiable. So it may be a breakdown of trust that is caused by something that is valid. It would have to be evaluated on a case-by-case basis, but ultimately it would have to be justifiable in a court of law. So it's not something that we can sit here and say who would decide what just causes. But at the end of the day, the minister would have to make that call, whether it's a just cause. So, but it would be something that the court would have to decide if it comes to a push.
Honourable Mullen, followed by Honourable Nyegan.
Chairperson, I support what you are saying, and we must put in a time frame. Relook at what is prescribed as far as the nomination process is concerned. If the minister must give notice to the various DGs to nominate a person, and that is like a 14 days notice, and they've got 14 days to nominate, then we easily work out. Do you need 30 days or up to 60 days maximum, and that you put as a time frame then in your bill?
Thank you, sir. I think I must sit a little bit far away from Honorable Mare, because he normally say what I've noted and then say what I wanted to say. Chair, I think one other point which I think the state legal advisor must comment on is on page 14. That clause 15. I think a question on the interpretation of this, because there's a number of case law that exists, even if it's not around the Council for Geoscience, but in other fields. In an event where one of the sections within the law is not very clear whether this is how, certain processes are supposed to take place. There was also even Honorable Sonto also said, why don't we change this May? Because May is open to different interpretations, and then when you want to do something, because this is about development, then if there are certain people who are not for it development, obviously because of such openness, such certain clauses of the law that are open for different interpretations. I thought the state legal advice will comment on that. I haven't heard them, because Dr. Das said there will be notices. Now, a notice, it comes as a result of the minister may issue. Can't we find different wording that is very clear what needs to happen, as it is happening with the appointment of the board members?
Honorable Murray?
Sorry, Chair, I have to come back in. I read it differently. If the department is asking for a directive, the minister has the right to decide if she wants to issue. I read it differently than he is interpreted. It's like they ask for it and she decides, no, I don't want to issue it. And the reason is that this is my reason, her reason, as a minister. The other way around.
Okay. Let's go on and respond. The state law advisor?
I
I agree, Chairperson, because it's an empowering provision. So what the minister is given there, it's a discretionary power. It's saying the minister should exercise the discretion on a case-by-case basis. I suppose it would be approached by the council, and then you would exercise that discretion and decide if it's desirable in the circumstances. And then, so where we are empowering in legislation, we're using the word may. We don't say must, because we don't want the minister to do it in willy-nilly in every case. So it's a word that's used legally in every case where discretion is given to a minister. Thank you, Chair.
On the same subject, would this provision not be interpreted to be in breach of rights to privacy by the property owners, or also not be contrary to other legislative provisions in another ministry, for example? Can you satisfy our mind on that?
Thank you, Chair. As I previously explained to the House, is that there is a similar provision already in the MPRDA, and no legal challenge has been received. The only barrier then I can be confirmed, that can be confirmed by the state law advisors, is that you notify the lawful occupier or landowner of the intention of the scientist to, or employee of the CGS to come and investigate. You can't arrive on any day without having given the lawful occupier owner of that land notice. That is the requirement. And then in the MPRDA, the provision goes further and says, should they be damaged to the property, the CGS in this instance will then be liable to pay the damages that arise from such investigation. So those, you know, that provision has been in the MPRDA for, 6 years now, and there's been no legal challenge to that. So I don't think there's any problem with that from a legal point of view.
Been used, though, because once you implement, that's where then you get the reaction.
I think it has been used, because we always have our inspectors going into, but on this one, the MPRDA says that should.
It's a matter that you can note, and then in the course we can then interact further on it. Yeah. Okay, continue responding to other questions that were asked.
Thank you, Chairperson. There was the whole issue of, the issue of the road, whether we will also investigate them. Certainly, yes, where people were building roads, large infrastructure, they will have to go through the Council for Geoscience. On the rights, we are not going to take the powers of the council, of the department in terms of issuing prospecting and mining rights. They will still be involved in those areas. We'll be involved in giving advice. It's just an advice when it comes to infrastructure development. So there are two different things. On earthquakes, yes, South Africa has earthquakes. We have got two types of earthquakes. We've got the mine-created earthquakes, whereby you find that most of the earthquakes are related to the mines. As you know, that we've got some of the deepest mines in the world. So we always have earthquakes. Sometimes they call them tremors. But they can also affect infrastructure. But we also have natural earthquakes in South Africa. The largest earthquake which we had was, I think, the 1960s in Western Cape. That was the largest one we had. But we have national earthquakes. And with earthquakes, once they happen, they will happen. So you don't know when they will happen, but they will happen. So the critical thing here is to continuously monitor what is happening and develop risks maps and risk information, which will then guide South Africa in terms of how to develop infrastructure, how to engineer the infrastructure to take into consideration the risk which is around there. But you can't do that if you don't continuously collect that information, because that information informs you in assessing the risk. And then you can, the engineers can look at that risk and say, but in this area, there is this risk of us getting earthquakes. Okay? So the design of our infrastructure must withstand this type of risk. I mean, I always give this example and say, if you look at what happened in Haiti, and what happened in Japan. I mean, what happens in Japan? If an earthquake of Haiti's magnitude would happen in Japan, a lot of people would not have died, you know. The designs of infrastructure in Japan would have maybe in a way helped to address this issue. So it's about understanding the risk, and when you design your infrastructure, you take into consideration that risk. Because it's still very difficult to predict when an earthquake will take place. So you work around the risk in terms of addressing earthquakes. The one issue which was raised was bribery. Always a problem, the issue of corruption. You can't stop it, isn't it? Will always come out, but you must always be vigilant and ensure that you address these issues with your staff. You need to put in place systems to guard against that, and just hope that it doesn't take place. But we have got to be very vigilant and put in place systems. I mean, simple procurement systems can address the issues of bribery. I was talking with the CFO yesterday. I said, you know, if you look at the procurement system at the Council of Future Science, if someone wants to be involved in bribery, that person will have to really work hard, because we've put in systems whereby we've got committees and committees. By the time the final decision is made on procuring services, I mean, everybody knows about what is happening. So you need to come with systems and put them in place and hope that this does not happen, but always be vigilant when it comes to these issues. And the issues of Transvaal Museum, it is managed by the Department of Arts and Culture under Northern Flagship. There's an institution called National Flagship. I don't know why they don't change the name, but we have got a section there, which is the geological museum, which we are managing there. I will discuss with the CEO and see how far is the situation of addressing that. And the other issue is the infrastructure, the cost of infrastructure development. We are not going to be involved in infrastructure development per se. That will be done by developers as it is. Okay, so we can't factor those costs in the act as it is. All what from our side, the developers will pay that nominal fee. I mean, if we have got to recover all the costs, it will be impossible. Some of the activities of the Council for Future Science are what we call public goods activity. It just recovers on nominal costs to ensure that the people don't abuse our services. The costs which are there, I think the CFO can explain them in detail, what are the costs all about. The other one is the impediment from the inputs of stakeholders. If you want to address that issue, Magwede will address it.
Thank you, honorable members. What we received from various institutions varied from supporting us and others who were complaining. For example, with Wits University, they were saying it's about time now that we have a proper system where we'll be addressing the environmental issues, because that was nowhere mentioned. Studies of geohazard related to different minerals associated with different mines. And others were complaining, saying that the Council for Geoscience, will it be able to undertake this big task because of capacity issues?
And then later on, we had a session with the particular institution again, where we had a workshop with DST. Then they clarified what they were saying, because they were saying right now in South Africa, if we look at proper research being done in all deposits leading to exploration, is not happening. They said all institutions stop doing that, and even there's no institution which is doing dating work, determining the age of the rock. He, the particular individual, said he was the last one to leave West University, and then shop was closed. And also recently, other mining companies took out their research institutions out of the country. Now, how is CGS going to be able to do that, seeing that we have issues of capacity? Then that's a different matter that will be addressed, because we'll be addressing capacity building as well. The other complaint looked like it was more of, they felt that CGS was going to be doing site investigation by itself, whereas CGS is looking into reviewing the work done by those contractors and then assess if they did follow the set standards to ensure that public safety is addressed. And also research which we'll be doing will be going into evaluating the ground to come up with a risk map which will then assist the municipalities and local government in identifying areas which are suitable to do the work. So those were the very complaints which came in. Some were supporting, others felt that they were threatened. It was also interesting, in some cases, others went to an extent saying that we are professionals, we are graduating in this field, why do you want to do it? So that's where it ended. Oh, the response is, yes, we do understand that you are professionals, you are graduates, but we are saying that, houses are being built on dolomitic land and they are falling, they are big holes. So if you say you're professionals, what do you say about that as well?
Chair? Can I just add, Chair? I want to concur with what Mr. Ramagwede has said and maybe add that we will be at your we will be guided by a director from yourself in terms of whether we should make available the responses to the various institutions that the Honourable Lucas requested to the secretary of this committee, if that is what the committee members would want to see. But we did respond in detail, as Mr. Ramagwede has now outlined, to the various inputs and comments, and I would want to concur in terms of what the subject matter of those input and comments was. The other issue that I think Dr. Ramoncha omitted to mention was to respond to was the internal appeal process that was highlighted by one of the honourable members. The appeal process is provided for in most legislation, also in the MPRDA. It is also mentioned that it's simply a cost-saving exercise where parties can see if they can't resolve the dispute internally. That does not take away their right to access the court. Section 34 of the Constitution is there. It does not limit your right in any way. It's just a matter of looking at saving costs before running to the court. Try and see if you can't resolve the dispute at a much reduced cost instead of going to the court first when you could have settled it internally first. So that is maybe one of the issues that Doc, you maybe wanted to address. Thanks. Thank you, Chair.
I think that's
right. Let's just take tea, coffee before it gets cold. 5 minutes, we'll come back and deal with follow-up questions and further engagement. Thank you.
Yes, I'm going to go to the doctor.
Thank you. I'm
trying to
get all my ducks in a row here.
Okay. I thought you just trying to avoid looking at that.
No, never do that.
Honorable members, shall we resume our meeting? I've seen just before we went for a break, there were indication of some of you looking at the second bite. Let's allow that, Honorable Marais.
Thank you, Chair. I would really be brief. Number one, I just want to move to page 6 again, point F. This is the developer, that's private and outside. Now let's talk in the case, if the state is a developer, building a new dam in the Orange River, then you have to go through your department and take your advice on that, as far as geoscience is concerned. That's the way I take it on 0.68, is that right? Is there a way that the state will save costs now? Because normally they point at a huge cost. They appoint people from outside consultants, for example, to build a new dam on various consultancies, things that must be done. So only that remark, and then the last one is back to that point we've made about on page 14. I just want to add and re-emphasize that we must put in that we've got already have in the MPRDA Act, put it in there, and the last 9 words of that wording, save out as far as your concerns is about other legislation, it's been stipulated in the last 9 words of that sentence. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. The objectives of the bill, you looking at being mandated to be the custodian of the geotechnical information, also playing a role of national advisory authority. But when I look at the provisions that you have made in Section 3 of this bill, you read that in conjunction with page 6, I think the subsection F, what I fail to see is whether you would want your advice to be taken by the bodies that you would be advising. And if they do not take your advice, what then? Because in your bill, when I read through, I have not come across a provision where you making your decision enforceable. Because the reason why I'm raising this is because in the main, development is driven by profit motive. You hear and you see today lots of court cases, backwards and forwards, where the state would grant, for example, a permission for a development. Let's take a municipality anywhere. And then members of the community or organs of civil society would then be against that particular development. And you can see the kind of contest that ensues. Now, in this instant, you would not be immune from developers who would say, oh yes, we've had your advice, but then advice remains as an advice. But take us through in terms of, because if it's the main objectives of this bill is to prevent what we see happening, then we must see mechanisms to effectively prevent, you know, the occurrence that we currently see now. But I don't seem to pick this up in the bill, but you point to me if there's an area where you deal with your powers and the enforceability of such an offense. The other matter on page 5, paragraph 40, Roman figure 2 of that subsection H. Research on behalf of the state or any other government institution, or on behalf of any person or institution, or support such research financially. I'm reading this in conjunction with your financial provisions that we must still deliberate on, and also given our oversight to yourselves, where you raise difficulties in terms of funding to an extent that some of the projects that you have decided upon had to be put on hold. And yet in this amendment, you are making such provisions
Are you comfortable that the current funding mechanisms that are in this act are adequate for you to can be able to be sufficiently funded? For instance, on the issue of the research on seismicity, you had to appeal to Mine Health and Safety Council for them to come into your rescue. And yet here, you're making commitment, legally so, that you will be able to fund. So we just need to be clear and ensure that the funding mechanisms that are provided for in the act are adequate. I've read in one section there that, yes, of course, you will receive money appropriated by Parliament and all of that. Now, the other question would relate to page 6, paragraph 50. Here I need clarity, really. You say, notwithstanding the provisions of any other law, the council shall have the right to inspect any information of the Department of Mineral Resources which the minister or an officer of the department designated by the minister may approve on such conditions as the minister or the said officer may determine. Just illustrate to us what are you referring to here, especially when it comes to the official of the officer of the department. Is this not a provision that may obstruct you in terms of doing, you know, the work that you are supposed to do? But you would then explain to us on that. Another section that I would want demonstrable examples on is on page 8, paragraph 40. The minister may from time to time reserve any matter provided for in this act as a matter in respect of which a decision of a board or the chief executive officer shall be subject to the approval of the minister. Just to illustrate, given the previous debate that we had on the powers of the minister. On page 9, I'm sure my reading is not it doesn't make reading sense to me. Your paragraph 20, in the case of the absence, in the case of a member, that's now Roman figure 1, in the case of a member, he or she has been absent from more than 2 executive meetings of the board without the leave of the chairperson. Well, what I'm trying to say here is that without the approval of the leave by approval of leave of absence by the chairperson, or what? Because it doesn't make good reading sense. All those 2 or 3 paragraphs. Because the following one says, in the case of the chairperson, he or she has been so absent without the leave of the board. Now, it's just grammatic. Maybe you will be able to explain it much better. I think, yes, the other one we've dealt with, the time frames in terms of the minister on good cause dissolving the board. Honourable members, I think we need to also, when we deliberate over the bill, reflect on this. I've picked up that there's a measure of uncomfortability on your side. You may want, which is something that you must think through, a formulation where you see Parliament playing a role. Whether before the board is ultimately dissolved, that must come via Parliament. I'm not sure, but I think we need to reflect, to apply our minds on this? And if we put that kind of a provision, would it be compatible with other provisions? Because if you have not taken part in the appointment of the board, why would you take part in the dissolution of the board? So I think we would need to think through that and then make that, you know, cross-reference to the original approach. The other matters, I think, would be to do with your, apart from what has been raised by members, would be to do with your finances. You are making a provision there that the appeals committee would cost you 11.7 million rand in the first year, incrementally up to 12.9 million rand in the third year. Is this intended for the dispute resolution mechanisms that you are discussing in the bill? And if so, are you anticipating the big volume of objections on decisions that you would take and hence this amount of money? The other question here, if you can explain to us what is the MRD, where you making reference to prospecting and exploration, but you are excluding petroleum in that financial provision. And can you explain why is petroleum being excluded from that? I think this would go to the state law advisors, parliamentary procedures. The state law advisors and the department are of the opinion that the bill must be dealt with in accordance with the procedures of Section 775. Here we're talking of developments that would take place in municipalities, developments that would take place in provinces, even including in rural areas, because mining by its very nature occurs in rural areas. And yet the bill is tagged as Section 75 bill. Is this not going to create problems for us? For instance, when this bill is passed by the National Assembly, it would have to go to the NCOP for concurrence. They may then want the process to be started afresh. But I want you to basically satisfy us, you know, how did you arrive at this proposal from yourselves as the state law advisor. Yes, so those are the questions that I would like you to respond to.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. The issue of whether our advice is enforceable, we debated it, I think, many sessions, and that is why we came with the wording of authority. So that basically suggests that or implies that nobody can continue with development without that advice. We give them a kind of a certificate and say, yes, this person came to the Council for Geoscience, and he or she can develop. That is the issue there. But we need to tighten the issue of policing. That is the biggest challenge of it. What happens if people continue and ignore us? Who must police them? That we still have to tighten it in the act in one way or another. But it will then, if the act goes through, it will be illegal for anybody who will go out there and develop without that certificate from the Council for Geoscience. And maybe you want to come in there.
Thanks, Chair. The initial wording that went to Cabinet, we said that serve as the national advisory mandatory authority. And then Cabinet said that we should remove the word mandatory because we put it there to give it more teeth. So Cabinet said that authority itself more than enough. If people would go and do something that CGS said it shouldn't be done, then it is a problem. So the word authority itself is...
State law advisor? Legally? legally, how is this? Is that sufficient?
Everything, I think we need to seriously apply our minds to it in conjunction with the department. But as it reads now, I don't think it says to a person that they should take that decision. I mean, the recommendation is what stands, or in taking the decision, they should abide by that recommendation. So, but we need to apply our minds to it carefully.
Yeah, you see why we're asking this. In common English, advice is an advice. The one who is being advised has got a right to take advice or not to take advice. Purely. So that's why then you need to be clear. Because if you want to prevent people from developing on dolomitic, you know, land, for example, then we must come out clear that we want to prevent this. Because already you are saying now the state is about to spend close to 3 billion rand relocating communities. And in no way can you say that within that amount you will be able to compensate for losses that people have incurred. Because in the situation where there are those holes that simply cave in, people lose, you know, their furniture and everything else. So we need, therefore, to be quite strong. That's why you'd have to apply your minds strongly on this matter. If you want to, you know, do what you say in terms of the objectives of the bill.
Chair, if I may, as Doc has pointed out, this is one issue that we debated for days on end in the consultations with the stakeholders. The decision was then taken, or the resolution was then taken, that the CGS then be an advisory body instead of a regulatory body, because that would change their model and funding structure completely. Should they change to a regulatory body, they would then no longer be able to undertake, I suppose, research as is currently the case, and do work that they're currently conducting, and at the same time regulate the industry. So you can't be a referee and a player at the same time. That is why the decision was then taken to move from a regulatory body, which will have to be set up, I suppose, independently from the Council of Geoscience, which has its own cost implications. I think a costing exercise, I think Doc and the CFO might speak with authority on that, came close to, I think it was at the time, 200-300 million per annum, should such a body be set up, because then you would have to look at people who go out on a daily basis doing those inspections, actually drawing up charges, charging people, making sure that those people are prosecuted. So the cost implications of that negated that resolution, and we sought to seek a much more cost-effective way of ensuring that development does not occur on dolomitic areas, while ensuring that the Council for Geoscience plays an integral role in ensuring that does not happen. Should a developer, for whatever reason, then proceed without having obtained the necessary documentation from the Council of Geoscience, that developer then opens himself up, him or her, to prosecution, I suppose, in terms of all the other laws that are applicable. Should a developer proceed to develop whatever development without the necessary documentation from the CGS? That's as far as I can take it.
Chapter, I think he has covered it. It's always difficult to say, look, do you want to create an independent body from the Council for Geoscience? There are cost implications and the like. So we thought to find a middle road and say, look, yes, we could find a middle road which is not cost
which is not going to cost government a lot of money. But my point here is, if this is a mandatory authority, if the organization becomes a mandatory authority, I think it will be illegal for anybody to go out there and develop without that certificate from the Cancer for Joe Fund. I will have to sit down with the legal people and sort it out. Because initially, as my colleagues earlier said, we had included the word mandatory, and then cabinet said, no, by having authority, you're already mandatory. So we removed the word mandatory. So we could talk, we could sit down and discuss it with the legal people to tighten that. That I think there's a hole somewhere there. We need to sort it. I agree with the chairperson.
I think waiting alone in the bill must suffice without us resorting to the establishment of another body. Because here you can use also the existing bodies. For instance, in the building of houses, NPHRC can play that role. Before they approve a particular development, they must call for a certificate from Geosciences. And if that certificate is not there, they are not approving. You know, so I think we can find a formulation which will make it stronger so that when you act, then people must know that it's not just a sheer advice on your part. It is basically more instructive that we mustn't, because we want to avoid future, you know, costs that could be incurred by both the citizens of the country or in the state. Okay. Proceed on the other
area. Thank you, Chairperson. On funding mechanism for this deal and the organization as a whole, yes, it is a challenge. The funding of the Council for Geoscience, we've been talking about it, it is a challenge. But I think the processes which are now in place through the minister's intervention are now helping a lot. I mean, we have engaged National Treasury about how the Council for Social Science must be funded, and we have put the document together on how to fund the organization. And we think that if all goes well in terms of approving the requests which we have put in place, in terms of the medium-term expenditure framework, we will be able to deliver on the mandate of the organization. Yes, and if funding for this deal is approved as it is, we should be able to deliver on the mandate of the organization. But we are also in discussions with National Treasury last week. We pointed out to them and said, look, we need to explore ways of funding the organization through perhaps levies or royalties, you know, which we could get from mining companies. And they were open to it. They said, let's put together a discussion document, but we have to talk to the department on it. We haven't discussed with the department thoroughly, but we'll explore other ways. But in the interim, I think if the requests which have been put forward are approved, things will be fine. We'll be able to deliver on the mandate. You want to come in there?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. What we've looked at here in trying to determine what funds we're going to require, if we did a thorough detailed analysis of what activities would, for instance, the appeal committee be doing, what kind of staff or personnel it requires, what running costs actually it would need, and what equipment it would need to operate. So the figures are supported by detailed figures, and they were escalated in terms of to take care of inflation going forward. And we take cognizance of the fact that some of those costs would not be recurrent. For instance, if we were to buy computers this year, we won't be buying them next year. So all those mechanisms of trying to get to a true figure have been taken into account. There is the research component as well has been factored into areas where we know that we already have staff available. All that needed is running costs for running the research type of work. So it's been a detailed, really thorough analysis, I must say.
Okay.
So
what's that, MRT?
the Mindful Test Development, MRD prospecting and stuff. Let's do that.
Can I respond to that on page 6? You raised a concern with subsection 1, which says, notwithstanding the provisions of any other law, the council shall have the right to inspect any information of the Department of Mineral Resources or any officer of the department designated by the minister may approve on such conditions as the minister or the said officer may determine. I think this one, it talks to the information. The mining industry are supposed to submit prospecting data to the department. So I think the right way to them should have been to analyze the information. We want them to submit the information to the council, but the council should have the right to analyze the information that has been submitted to them.
Okay. MRD refers to Mineral Resources Development. So we excluded petroleum there because there are funds for petroleum through the agency, Petroleum Agency of South Africa. Okay. Chairperson, on leave of the chair, okay, absence of board members from a meeting. I think maybe it's just a word in there, but what it means is that if a person is absent without sending apologies, this is how it is. Maybe we should just sit down with the legal people to reword it. But this just means that if a person is absent without sending an apology to the chairperson, that's it. The other one is on the issue of information from the department. We brought in the issue of the of this, but we thought that we have to work through the officials in this regard. It has been a clause which has been there all the time. We just amended the small little thing there, but it has just been there all the time. It's just to ensure that the officials of the department are also involved in such a process where the when the Council for Joe Science requires information. I think we've covered it. Oh, there's one. Okay. Ramagwedu will address another one.
Chairperson, on the issue of state saving costs in CGS doing its work, the answer is yes, in a sense that we'll be evaluating the work done and then come up with a solution ensuring that no further damages will be expected after we consulted all our risks so far. However, we are not saying that the state will not incur costs in as far as doing design and construction, because that needs to happen, and also proper investigation. Somebody still needs to go out to field and drill and investigate. We just want to ensure that our proper decisions which fit the investigations are made.
Okay. If I may, I think that without leave should maybe say without notifying the chairperson. That might solve the problem. I think it's just a matter of the wording, as the stock has already pointed out.
Okay. I thought that unless there are further issues that the honourable members would want to raise, I trust that you have taken note of the issues that we have raised, and but I think the state law advisors are still going to respond to this other question. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
The issue of the tagging of a PLCHA person, we looked at the subject matter of a PLCHA person in conjunction with what the Constitution requires in Section 76 and 75. And looking at the Schedule 4, we couldn't find anything, Chairperson, that requires that the bill be tagged as the Section 76 bill. So that was the reason, Chairperson, that we take it as a 75 bill. The issues of development are really issues that are incidental to the subject matter of the bill, but not really the main thrust of the bill.
Dr. Ramuji?
Thank you, Chairperson. There was one issue on page 8, paragraph 4. I didn't answer that one. It's with regards to the paragraph, it says the minister may from time to time reserve any matter provided for in this act as a matter in respect of which a decision of the CEO shall be or the board shall be subject to the approval of the minister. I think this is just to say that the minister will, from now, from time to time, say, look, there are certain things which you will need my approval as a board or as a minister. I mean, as a board or as the CEO, and I reserve the right to those things so that you must get approval from me.
Questions?
It could be, let me think about.
You know why? We were deliberating here over concerns raised by honourable members on, you know, too much powers conferred to the minister, and we responded by saying that there are checks and balances, and this clause seems to be open ended to say that. You know, you might be subjecting the board to be micromanaged, unintendedly so, if you're not clear of what you are alluding to here. So that's why I'm looking for what kind of an example can you give, because it might well be that each and every decision that the board takes must meet with the approval of the minister.
I don't think that is the intention. I think if you look at in your opening remarks, you made mention of the Department and Council of Geoscience giving impetus to the idea of a developmental state, identifying of strategic minerals, what if the minister's view would be the best way to approach specific issues that are important for the state, as you were. And some of those ideas might not be supported by members of the board, as we know is happening in some of the SOEs, which I suppose you are aware of. The minister then can give that kind of strategic direction to ensure that the ideals of a developmental state are adhered to and achieved without being paralyzed by a board who don't share similar sentiments, and that, you know, does happen from time to time. It's not for the minister to be involved or to approve all the decisions of the board, but to ensure that the mandate of the government is achieved by all the SOEs that are under, I suppose, supervision.
Thank you very much, Chair. I did not hear them responding, for instance, Dr. Ramuncha here, on your question of the parliamentary participation in the composition of the board. I think you asked some clarity around that from them.
Yeah. I was saying it's for us to apply our minds and for themselves to apply their minds, that if we say we want to play some role, let us define that role, so that if we would want to have a right in approving the dissolution, the decision to dissolve the board, that cannot just be a right on the dissolution and without a right on the appointment of the board. So I was just throwing it open to all of us to basically apply our minds and also giving a degree of autonomy to this structure to run, you know, efficiently. Yes, I will.
Yeah, thank you very much. Because according to what I know, geoscience is a state, it's a 100% state-owned entity. And therefore, Parliament actually should be seen to participate in the composition of this board by way of, for instance, I know in other portfolios where Parliament will maybe conduct interviews to those board members, so that even if there's maybe the dissolution of the board itself, Parliament also can also be part of that. So what I'm saying is that maybe if we could be seen doing that as well, conducting those interviews, even though we not conversant maybe, or we don't have the technical know-how of the what to call, but just to participate as well in that aspect. Thank you.
No, honourable member, I said let's apply our minds. Let's not discuss it now, because exactly your last statement. If this is the direction we want to take, we must ask ourselves that are we well conversant with, you know, the work involved. I'm not any chance to say that we may not have basic understanding of what is happening at the Geosciences Council, given our oversight, and we have been there. But let's apply our mind so that you don't invite a responsibility that we may not necessarily discharge, you know, optimally as Parliament. So we need to weigh these things. But when we come to discussion, you know, we will look into that as well. But one thing is that I missed when I was just reading on your bill and looking at the edge. The section that deals with definition seems to be quite mean. Seems to be quite mean, and you're making reference to a number of functions here that are not defined. I don't know if there's an intention for you to define. For instance, the whole question of your seismology, what else is there, your geotechnical information. I just want you to think through, because sometimes a section that deals with definitions assists a person who reads the act to be able to understand some of the terminology that is being used. So, but if you believe that what is currently provided for in the current Act is sufficient, you tell us. But my own reading is that it's not sufficient. It's not sufficient, except the amendments that you have just, you are making in section 1. We stayed with the definition. Having said that, I think you have taken note of all the areas that we have raised. You will also take note of points that are going to be raised by members of the civil society when we engage on public hearings starting from Wednesday. That process is expected to be completed on Friday next week, and that surely we will have then a discussion on the 8th to basically look at what amendments have you affected and what amendments have you not affected, so that we are able to then agree or disagree with the bill. But for now, I think members have given you indication of areas where they want some reformulation to be effected. Honorable members, that would take care of the subject matter for today and our business for today. And